Lesson number 3. Always available. God is always available to help His people in every circumstance. He promises, I will never leave you nor forsake you. In the days of Israel, the ever-visible smoke from the altars in the court and the holy place reminded everyone that cared to look that redemption and intercession, sacrifice and prayer were there for them all the time. This is the meaning of the famous word, Hebrew word, tamid, continual, all the time available. In this week's lesson, we shall review the ways in which God is always there for His ancient children as examples of how He is always there for us today. Part number 1, first things first. After Nebuchadnezzar had removed the Jews from Palestine, he imported people from other countries to take over their cities and fields. Now, 70 years later, some of the Jews had returned to their homeland. Here they found others living in the homes of their fathers, or who had built new homes on their land. It is true that they had come with the authorization of King Cyrus and had his orders to the local inhabitants to allow the Jewish people to take over, and on top of all this, to pay their taxes no longer to Persia, but to the rulers of the Jews. But the inhabitants of Palestine, seeing what was taking place around them, grew enraged, banded together to resist the activities of the Jews. The result was that the people of God were terrified by the hostility of the local inhabitants. But before they set about restoring their own homes and farms, even before they began to rebuild the temple, the faithful built the altar on its original position in the Temple Mount, on the very place where Isaac had been offered by Abraham. The priests then offered the sacrifice, laid its parts upon the altar. This symbol of the cross was at the very center of their worship. All this was done in the 7th most important month in the Jewish calendar. The Feast of Trumpets, called Rosh Hashanah, fell on the first day. On the 10th day, the Day of Atonement, Yom Kippur, and from the 15th to the 22nd, the Feast of Tabernacles, Sukkoth. By the way, if you want to look up these words, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkoth in Webster's Dictionary, you will get a neat little explanation of them. This attitude of these Hebrews calls attention to the truth which underlines all true worship, that sacrifice must be at the foundation of all our service to God. And this points to Calvary. Just as the children of Israel camped all around the sanctuary, the tabernacle in the wilderness, so these returning pilgrims pitched their temporary tents all around the altar. They moved around it and spread out from it. It was the central dynamic of their experience. During the Feast of Tabernacles, the people were required to come up to the holy city and dwell in booths or bowers made of the branches of living trees. This looked forward to the gathering of the saints to the Father's house in the eternal holy city, and their dwelling in His presence around His temple. It was at this time that Solomon had dedicated his temple to God centuries before. Part number 2, building preparations. As the work was begun in earnest, Joshua the high priest and Zerubbabel the secular ruler gathered together all the skilled workmen among the returned pilgrims and entered into a contract with them to carry out the work of building, and agreed upon their wages. They relied upon their own talented personnel. Notice this. They did not make Solomon's blunder of importing heathen workmen, or experts from abroad, or outsiders who demanded high wages and upset the more modest needs of God's people. We should avoid this temptation to look to outsiders for help. When God calls His people to do something, He empowers members of His people to carry out His task. Then they set about gathering the vast amounts of materials necessary. They needed the best lumber. Most of the cedars of Lebanon grow in the mountains east of Sidon, to the north. So the leaders sent to the Phoenicians with a request that they might purchase some cedar logs. The Sidonians were to cut down the trees, drag them to the sea, raft them down to Joppa, just as Solomon had done 4 centuries earlier. From Joppa, the Jews would drag them up to Jerusalem, 2,000 feet above sea level. It took some 7 months to collect enough materials. Part number 3, Cornerstone Celebration. After the site had been prepared, the leaders of God's people organized a celebration of the laying of the cornerstone. Levite choirs were organized. Psalms of David that had long earlier been used, the dedication of Solomon's temple, were mastered. People gathered in high spirits. The entire congregation joined in rejoicing. They sang the great hymns of the Hebrew church and praised the Lord for all He had accomplished. King of Persia supported them with money and authority, brought back the precious furniture looted from the previous temple. Everything was working out well. Future was bright. But Satan invariably sees to it that there is always a but when God's cause is going forward. But the oldies, 70 more years old, remembered. In their minds, the glorious Solomon's temple had been blown into vast proportions. They started to gripe. Yet it was only the cornerstone which had been laid. Greeks have a saying that is very applicable in such circumstances. Fools and little children should not see a job half done. Ellen White notes, the murmuring and complaining and the unfavorable comparisons made had a depressing influence. Criticism discouraged the workers. They were doing their best, and here, some among them, oldies, too old to work themselves, could do nothing else but criticize. Part number 4, Samaritan confrontation. Not only were these internal critics discouraging, there were external, outside harassment from the Samaritans. The Samaritans were descended from the population that had been moved into Palestine when the Jews were expelled. There were a few Jews left. These all had amalgamated. There was a kind of mixed worship. A Levitical priest had been sent to give them some instruction. But these Samaritans, these people of the land, as they were called, Am Haaretz, they were mixed in their points of view. Now, seeing that the Jews had come back and were popular in the Persian mind, they offered to help. Their offer was politically motivated. They hoped to gain control of the whole operation. Zerubbabel declined their suggestion. Had the Jewish leaders, Ellen White continues, accepted the offer of assistance, they would open the door for the entrance of idolatry. They discerned the insincerity of the Samaritans and refused to accept their help. Part number 5, Prevailing Prayer. In the 10th chapter of Daniel, we are taken behind the scenes and shown Satan striving with King Cyrus to turn him against the work being done. For 3 whole weeks, the king was striving for a most important decision. The devil was urging him to cancel his decree, authorizing the restoration of temple and city of Jerusalem. Gabriel was trying to help the king to remain steadfast, but as he began to waver, Michael personally came to help in the conflict and persuaded Cyrus to let the work continue. I am sure that Cyrus was totally unaware of the battle that was then raging in the great controversy. We too may be unaware of the battle raging within us regarding our choices, which might hinder or advance the cause of God. But Jesus, Michael, stands prepared to help the angels who are sent to minister to those who are called according to God's purpose. Today, our warfare is not against flesh and blood, but against evil spirits in heavenly places. We need the help of Jesus more than ever. Daniel, praying 3 times a day, influenced the mindset of Cyrus. He aided the workers. He cooperated with the angels of God. He helped to frustrate the demon himself and made the task of the Jews successful. Prayer then, prayer now, prevails. The temple of old, the spiritual temple that God builds today, will be completed. God permits us to encounter obstacles, persecution, hardships, not as a curse, but as the greatest blessing of our lives. Every temptation resisted, every trial bravely borne, gives us a new experience, advances us in the work of character building. The soul that through divine power resists temptation reveals to the world and to the heavenly universe the efficiency of the grace of Christ. God has always been available to his people. God still is. Let us avail ourselves of his Spirit and his grace.